News. I'm Dave Packer. 15 states will vote on Super Tuesday, warning around a third of the delegates required for the presidential nomination. Nikki Haley telling voters in Burlington, Vermont,
I need you to go Tuesday and vote.
But former President Trump leading in the polls by a wide margin. In Selma, Alabama, on the anniversary of Bloody Sunday, Vice President Kamala Harris turning her focus to the Middle East, calling the situation in Gaza a humanitarian catastrophe.
Given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire.
But an Israeli newspaper saying Israel boycotted Gaza's ceasefire talks in Cairo today after Hamas rejected its demand for a complete list, naming hostages that are still alive. Iowa's Caitlin Clark on a free throw, becoming the highest scoring Division I player in the NCAA. That's for men or women. This is ABC News. A 15-year-old was shot after a massive brawl broke out at Six Flags Over Georgia on the park's opening day on Saturday. Police returning fire from an unruly crowd, striking the teen, who's now in critical condition. Bag checks and DUI checkpoints are what spring breakers can expect in Florida, not just Miami. Fort Lauderdale is also tightening restrictions. No coolers, no tents, no loud music on the beach. More from ABC's Morgan Norwood.
Depending on the crime and the city, you can face as much as $500 in fines or even 60 days behind bars. Law enforcement warning that the criminal record will follow well beyond that good time at spring break.
A commercial ship carrying more than 20,000 metric tons of fertilizer is sunk in the Red Sea after being attacked by Houthi rebels. The Belize-flagged UK-owned cargo vessel had been drifting, leaking fuel and fertilizer since it was hit by an Iran-backed Houthi missile nearly 2 weeks ago. U.S. officials have warned of the potential for ecological damage to the Red Sea. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Vehicles have overtaken power plants as America's biggest source of carbon emissions. In Wisconsin, the push for electric buses is accelerating. Mike Mohn reports.
The city of Racine has made headlines in recent years for leveraging federal funds to add more electric buses operated by its transit agency. And through the bipartisan infrastructure law, school systems like the Palmyra Eagle District have used federal grants to buy a handful of buses fitted with such technology. Susan Mudd is with the Environmental Law and Policy Center, a Midwest-based advocacy group. She says it's encouraging to see this activity, knowing the benefits that come with it.
The children or the riders on buses, including the drivers, will experience zero tailpipe emissions, which they now do because fumes, unfortunately, often get recirculated into buses.
These models also prevent harmful emissions from floating through neighborhoods, especially when buses are idled. Mudd says this has a positive effect on human health, as well as mitigating climate change, with transportation making up nearly 30% of U.S. carbon emissions. But even with federal support, she acknowledges there are still upfront cost barriers in securing electric buses. Mudd adds that implementing charging stations for larger electric bus fleets can be more intensive than infrastructure for passenger models.
It definitely requires more equipment, may require transformer upgrades, and that is more costly.
Organizations like hers are appealing to utilities to help make this infrastructure more accessible to schools and transit agencies. In late 2022, Wisconsin received more than $25 million in federal support to replace 65 diesel school buses around the state with electric ones. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Slecker.
And this is Dr. Johnny Lupinacci.
Friday, best of the week, trending education news.
Busted pencils every weekday at 7 p.m.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, breezy with a low around 42 and a scattered shower or storm. Scattered showers and storms on your Monday with a high near 55. And scattered showers and storms Monday night, those will taper off, a low around 36. Becoming sunny on your Tuesday, highs around 50. Right now, it's 58.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning, and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
First up on this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Matinere On Air, where this week, Jane and Greg talk with Lisa Schiller from the Better Business Bureau to discuss how to watch out for scams and keep your information safe.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinere On Air. Jane Matinere, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you live from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, call or text at 844-967-2789 or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or the platform that Elon ruined. We are going to be talking about how to avoid getting scammed, and we want to talk about some of the differences between actual charity nonprofits and political nonprofit-ish. So our guest from the Better Business Bureau of Wisconsin, Lisa Schiller. Thank you so much for joining us, Lisa. How are you?
Good, Jane. Thanks. Glad to be here. Hi, everybody.
Tell us, first of all, Lisa, what is a regular nonprofit versus what is called, it's called a 527, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of confusion in regard to, you know, charities and donating and, you know, organizations soliciting for donations. And actually, I have been seeing a lot of inquiries coming in to the Better Business Bureau here in Wisconsin, excuse me, as well as to our BBB scam tracker from consumers wanting more information about donating. You know, they're saying that they're getting aggressive calls, they're getting mailers in the mail asking for donations, and they want to know where their money is going.
Are these coming from a particular 527 that people should be on the lookout for?
You know, they're not coming from a particular one, but they're coming from, you know, organizations that have very similar sounding names that are, you know, very similar to charities that are legitimate and whose money is not going to, say, a political organization or a political action committee. So there's a big difference between donating to a charity and donating to a political action committee. And oftentimes what I'm seeing is that people are not realizing where, you know, who they're donating to.
Sure.
Until they reach out to us. And then I look on their website and, you know, scan it real well and then turn around and inform the consumer, you know, go to the company's web or organization's website. And, you know, you really need to know who you're donating to.
So what should people be on the lookout for, Lisa? If say I go to this organization's website, is there anything on there that's going to jump out at me that's going to send off a red flag?
You know, not necessarily, Jane. And that's why, you know, consumers can check with the Better Business Bureau. We have a charity arm called Give, but Give Wisely. It's our Giving Alliance. We have a specific website for it. It's give.org. And you can check on a charity just by going to that website. What we do, the Better Business Bureau reaches out to charities and organizations and asks for financial information. We want to know where their money is going exactly, We break it down. If the organization provides the information, you'll find a beautiful little pie chart that will help you to understand exactly where your money is going. Is the money that you're donating, you know, your hard-earned dollars, are they going to the CEO's salary? Are they going to, you know, the mission for which it was accomplished? I mean, you're donating, so you should know exactly where your money goes.
That's one of the things, you know, that's interesting is we actually talked about this yesterday briefly about getting these scam phone calls from the ones asking for things like police and fire.
The national firefighters, and, whatever, you know, something like that.
Yep. And and I was discussing, there was a documentary on Max called Telemarketers, and people need to know that they can simply ask these individuals, how much money is going to this charity? What do you do? Like, you can actually ask the people who are calling you. Now, they will maybe wiggle their way through the questioning to try to get the answer you want, so you give them the money, but you are empowered to ask these organizations these questions.
Gosh, Greg, absolutely. And consumers should. I mean, you have every right to know where your money is going when you donate it, right? And any legitimate charity or soliciting organization will be happy to tell you or provide the information to you. You know, what I'm seeing a lot from consumers, I was starting to say in the beginning before I almost had a coughing attack, excuse me, is that, you know, I started to see suddenly all these inquiries and comments from consumers to our BBB Scam Tracker, which is a fabulous online reporting tool that we have at bbb.org. And these consumers were saying, you know, I asked for information and what I got in the mail was, you know, a bill or it looked like a bill. And I reached out to our umbrella organization, our charity arm, and I said, hey, do you have any information out there on, you know, identifying the difference between political organizations and PACs or political action committees and charities? I'd love to get the information out to consumers because we're seeing, you know, sudden a volume of inquiries going up. So and then this is the press release that that you saw that I
yes.
put out. It's called When a Charity is Actually a 527 Political Organization. So that being said, you know, what we really recommend to consumers is, first of all, like you said, Greg, ask whoever is soliciting for information. They should give you their website. You should be able to find out all the information there. Definitely take a minute to check on the charity. Go to give.org in order to do that. You have to really pay attention to name confusion. I think that's what, you know, we're seeing a lot of. The use of the words police and firefighter, as was mentioned before by you, Greg, veterans, the term cancer, we're seeing all of that. If the organization's name does not necessarily, the name of the organization does not necessarily mean that the charity is engaged in these issues. And I think that's the important thing to remember. You know, people see these words and it tugs at their heartstrings, mm-hmm. veterans, cancer, you know, and they want to just give. And let's not forget, people feel rude hanging up the phone. So, you know, they're apt to just say, all right, fine, I'll make a donation and move along. But, you know, we really want people to do a little research, take a step back.
You know, going a couple of steps back, Lisa, the Better Business Bureau, I feel like we all have this idea of what the Better Business Bureau does. It's like, oh, I can go and check and see if a business is good. But you've got a whole arm that deals with this. Like, it's what is the total breadth of the Better Business Bureau and what we can come to expect from you and protecting us from various nefarious groups or businesses?
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, the Better Business Bureau has been around for over 100 years. In fact, the BBB Wisconsin is celebrating its 80th year this year. It's been around a long time, and I think a lot of people generally think of us as a complaint processing organization, complaint taking, which we do, but we do so much more. We first of all provide information on companies through our reports at bbb.org, which are completely free to the public. We let you know if we've received complaints on the company. You can read word for word what those complaints say by the consumer. You know, we do investigating. It's one of my jobs. We share that information with law enforcement and various agencies locally and on a national level. And we refer cases as well. We do advertising review. We offer mediation, arbitration, a whole variety of things. And then, like you said, we have this charity arm that most people don't know about. Now, a lot of local BBBs, we have BBBs in every state, do their own charity reviewing. We no longer do that in Wisconsin. We send those to our umbrella organization, which is our charity arm, the Wise Giving Alliance, and they do those. But we do have reports on political action committees and political organizations here at BBB.org, because those are not the same as charities or soliciting organizations, if that makes any sense.
It does, and it's really important. And I think, again, and we talk about this very frequently, if you have older people in your life, if you have senior citizens in your life, they're the ones who are most likely to pick up the landline. They're the ones who are most likely going to be... Wisconsinites are kind-hearted people, like you said, Lisa, and can easily be swayed into, well, I can do $5. I can do... Well, if you're on a fixed income, that can add up really, really quickly. And so you need to talk to the people that you love in your life to give them a heads up, to be a little more suspicious. And I know it's kind of painful that we have to approach things with suspicion, but this is where we are.
And they don't stop at $5. They're like, $5 would be great. But we also have a platinum package that is $45, and it gets you a sticker.
Well, and this is exactly what we hear. And, you know, my father had suffered a double stroke years ago, and he was in assisted living. And I can tell you, I was literally visiting when he would get these calls. And I would get so angry, and they would actually send him what looked like a bill. Mm. So they'd start out by going, hey, Joe, last year you gave $50. How about $55 this year? And, you know, my dad was completely incapable of understanding, and he would just agree to anything. And that's why they'd send him a bill. I cannot tell you how many times I turned around and called these people and also filed complaints against them. To have my father removed, because that's exactly what they do. They pressure, you know, not everybody, you know, but there are businesses out there that pressure consumers into donating. And this is why it's so important to know exactly who you're giving to and, you know, don't fall into that name confusion.
Lisa Schiller is our guest from the Better Business Bureau of Wisconsin. And we're talking about legitimate charities versus political fundraising organizations, and your money may not be going exactly where you think it is, so you have to do a little bit more investigating. Lisa, you said that one of you are an investigator, so now I have this vision of you all in black,
Columbo,
with a cape, you know, Lisa Schiller, crime fighter, and she's gonna go bust these crummy people, because how do these people sleep at night? The scammers, how do you sleep?
They sleep in a blanket of money.
I guess.
I mean, it's becoming more, I have to say, like, I didn't know until years ago, like a couple years ago, that when the police, you know, retirement fund or, you know, and they would call me and I would listen to them. And then I realized, oh, this is a robot. They're not even, this isn't even a real person. So now I don't, cause I used to feel guilty when I hung up on them.
And that's the whole idea.
And now I hear like, you know, you want to give to the police benevolence fund? Click. Nope. If I want to give to the, and that's the other thing too, is when you talk about Jane with older people, if they want to be charitable, maybe sit down and say, all right, you want to be charitable? Here are five organizations that we will donate.
Yeah.
And we will work on this together. But anybody else who wants money, nope. You put together a plan.
Lisa, we have more questions for you. If you can stay with us for a little bit longer.
Sure.
Lisa Schiller is with the Better Business Bureau of Wisconsin. If you have a question for Lisa, you can text it in at 844-967-2789. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You need skill and a little luck to play the game of pool, and you could say one cue-making company in Wisconsin has both. Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake is the oldest pool cue-maker in the U.S. and remains a family-owned, third-generation operated business. Schmelke started as a one-man shop in the 1940s. Now more than 20 employees work at the facility. So do you know which state has the most cue-making manufacturers? Is it Maryland, Minnesota, Wisconsin? The answer coming up.
Pool is an old game, and the cues similar to the ones used to play today were created in the late 1600s in Northern Europe. Pool came to America in the 19th century. So did you guess which state currently has four of the top five cue manufacturers? It is Wisconsin. And Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake has also been inducted into the International Cue Makers Hall of Fame, making this a worldwide slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Up North News, where Pat Kreitlow this week talks about the Supreme Court and presidential immunity.
Listen to that clarinet there. I talked about the clarinet, but now listen to this original version of a song you do know.
Georgia, the whole day through.
That's Hoagie Carmichael and his orchestra. That's the original version of Georgia on My Mind from 1930. It's in the Grammy Hall of Fame. The clarinet solo is being played by jazz musician and band leader Jimmy Dorsey, who was born on this day in 1904 in Pennsylvania to a coal mining family that included his older brother and future band leader Tommy Dorsey. So there's your little history lesson preview for the day.
I thought this song was written by Ray Charles.
By Ray Charles, sir. And honestly, the first time I heard it for years was the Willie Nelson version, tells you, because you know what you grew up in. And I grew up at a time when my parents were going through like a country music phase.
Yeah.
And so you heard that phase as well. So yeah, yesterday was actually the first time I'd heard about that as I was reading up on Jimmy Dorsey. So we've got all that to go with here. Unpacking the news now at 6:21. The news out of the U.S. Supreme Court, I have to say, is troubling. And it's also one that I predicted. I wish I weren't right, but I was right, that the far-right conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court are working with or for former President Donald Trump to continue to delay any justice that might be brought for his election interference. And somebody who sees just the headlines might think, well, wait, Pat, no, wait. Didn't the U.S. Supreme Court agree yesterday to hear the case about Trump, claiming that presidents should have, absolute power and full immunity? Yes, but they dragged their feet getting there. But more importantly, they didn't have to hear this case. Now, this is all part of the special counsel Jack Smith investigation, the federal investigation into Trump's attempts to overturn an American election, to rig it, to cheat it, to undermine it, with the violence that erupted alongside it that he knew was happening and did nothing to stop once it started. He's claiming absolute immunity, and a judge has said no. And then it went to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and they didn't just say no. I mean, it was a smackdown, saying in so many words the legalistic version of, you're full of crap. The Supreme Court does not have to take up everything that comes to them from the appeals court. They don't. Many times they refuse to hear a case without comment. And it's their way of saying, we've read the appeals court judgment, and it's airtight, and there's really nothing more to add. And the Supreme Court could have done that weeks ago, or they could have decided weeks ago, okay, fine, we're gonna hear it. Instead, they've waited weeks and now have said, yep, we'll hear it, and we're not going to hear arguments until April 22nd. The Supreme Court back in 2000 heard and decided Bush v. Gore in 3 days. That's how you expedite a case of national importance, not a couple of months. But that's what this Supreme Court is willing to do. And Daily Beast columnist David Rothkopf also puts it quite clearly, saying, let's not beat around the bush. This decision to hear the case is outrageous and at its heart fundamentally corrupt. The appeals court decision was bulletproof, and there is no case Trump has any sort of immunity. The decision not to hear it until late April makes further significant trial delays likely. They are deliberately delaying the trial without any reasonable legal reason to do so. This is a political decision, he writes, and in my estimation, it is an ugly one. And I can't argue with it except for this point. And it's not an insignificant point, I will admit. But the Supreme Court, other analysts say, want a Supreme Court stamp on this case. If a president is going to claim absolute immunity, that they can order the political assassination of their rivals and not face justice, the Supreme Court should make very clear where it stands. Again, that's fine. But I will tell you again, the Supreme Court in 2000 took up Bush v. Gore in 3 days because they understood that time was of the essence in this kind of an instance. And that's exactly what this Supreme Court could have done, should have done, decided not to do. On Capitol Hill, the government shutdown has been punted yet again for, I think, the fourth time now. And it's not, look, we're not going to see any big developments this weekend. And it could be that what we're putting off is the inevitable, that this just goes all the way through the year and there is no shutdown, but then there also is no change in the budget. And we've talked earlier about how there should be some changes in the budget, and Democrats and Republicans should come together and reach agreement on things like the Farm Bill. But they're not going to now. Speaker Mike Johnson told his fellow Republicans back last weekend that they should not expect the inclusion of many of their major policy priorities, but that he did expect to secure a number of smaller victories. Among the measures that Republicans have sought are one that would, again, these are the Republican demands to not have a government shutdown. One would curtail access to abortion medication. Another, this one's stunning, restrict the Department of Veterans Affairs from flagging veterans deemed mentally incompetent in a federal background check needed to buy a gun. So again, if a veteran is deemed mentally incompetent, the Department of Veteran Affairs right now can flag them and it will come up in a federal background check when they go to buy a weapon, and Republicans don't want that to happen. Again, I'm not making any political arguments here. I'm just telling you what they're demanding, and you decide if that's reasonable and responsible or not. They have also tried to block an effort by Democrats to increase funding for nutrition programs for low-income women and children. Because again, why not go full Snidely Whiplash, you know, when you're doing this kind of thing? I told you yesterday, I think one of their demands was to bring the Homeland Security Secretary's salary to zero. They also want to defund all climate change actions and prohibit funding for diversity and inclusion training. These are all the things that Republicans were demanding in order to give Speaker Johnson enough Republican votes. We all know that right now, Speaker Johnson could bring to the floor matters that would keep the government open and that would provide desperately needed aid to Ukraine. But Republicans for a generation now have abided by something called the Hastert Rule, named for a disgraced child sexual offender who served as Speaker of the House. The Hastert Rule was, well, even if it's got majority support, thanks to Democratic help, we're not bringing it up unless it has a majority of Republican support, which is a hell of a way to run a democracy. But that is exactly what Republicans have been doing ever since. So even though, again, you have the votes there to keep the government open, Speaker Johnson has been holding back on that. The same could be said for a border security bill as well. And again, it's their right to do all this, but now they're going to be running for re-election and having to tell people, well, the border is a big issue and, you know, all these other things are big issues, but that they would rather see a government shutdown rather than negotiate with Democrats to actually get things done. Stephanie Hoff, I believe, is in for Pam Yonke on the Midwest Farm Report. And then Joe Zepecki follows right here on Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Broadcasting from the City Deck Studios on North Washington Street, the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. 15 states will vote on Super Tuesday, awarding around a third of the delegates required for the presidential nomination. Nikki Haley telling voters in Burlington, Vermont,
I need you to go Tuesday and vote.
But former President Trump leading in the polls by a wide margin. In Selma, Alabama, on the anniversary of Bloody Sunday, Vice President Kamala Harris turning her focus to the Middle East, calling the situation in Gaza a humanitarian catastrophe.
Given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire.
But an Israeli newspaper saying Israel boycotted Gaza's ceasefire talks in Cairo today after Hamas rejected its demand for a complete list naming hostages that are still alive. Iowa's Caitlin Clark on a free throw, becoming the highest scoring Division I player in the NCAA. That's for men or women. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks win again.
Hi,
I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Bulls in Chicago 113-97. Giannis with 46 points and 16 rebounds. The Bucks have now won 5 in a row. Chicago's Nikola Vukovic got frustrated and smacked Milwaukee's AJ Green in the face and was ejected from the game. Head coach Doc Rivers.
It was great. You know what? I just liked our defensive energy all game. I thought that's what changed the game. I thought we got into them. Game got a little chippy. But I thought it got chippy over just defensive pressure. Just as long as we keep our composure, that was the only thing I kept telling our guys. So, and then Giannis, you know, it's that thing we talked about, feeding the pig, meaning if you fall on a plate, it works. And we had the little angle action, stay with it. You know, the one time they went away from it, that's when I jumped up and said, why would you go away from something that just keep running it and keep running in something else? Then you do that.
That's the Bucks head coach Doc Rivers with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, breezy with a low around 42 and a scattered shower or storm. Scattered showers and storms on your Monday with a high near 55. And scattered showers and storms Monday night, those will taper off, a low around 36. Becoming sunny on your Tuesday, highs around 50. Right now, it's 58.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking about problems in the community is the first step for the Green Bay-based We All Rise African American Resource Center. But talking has to lead to helping. Executive Director Robin Scott.
They're in need of skill building, education, introduction to the workforce, and support along the way. We don't heal in silos.
Scott says since the nonprofit started a few years ago, more than 2,000 people have used the center to change their lives.
As a community, when we're all thinking about, you know, being the best version of ourselves, we have to ensure that we're being real. And I feel like when you have nonprofits in your community, that organizations that are on the ground and doing the work and they're willing to acknowledge exactly what's going on, that's a sign of a future of a healthy city.
Learn more about this important resource at weallriseaarc.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Hi, I'm Pete Schwabe, an actor, writer, director, and comedian. Join me for my new show, Nightlight, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll chill after a long day in traffic, talking politics, or trying to look busy at work. We'll talk movies, TV, theater, music, and lots of fun Wisconsin stuff. So mix an old-fashioned and join the discussion. We'll go from Wisconsin to Hollywood and back, and you can still be in bed at a reasonable hour. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Talk of Green Bay, 97.9 FM, WGBW.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You
your home for the Devil's Advocates, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the Devil's Advocates, where this week Crute talks with Matt Rothschild, formerly with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, about the new maps in the state.
60% of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Thursday edition. It's getting better right now. I got a co-devil. He is Matt Rothschild, affectionately known as Batman, from formerly the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, now fresh out of retirement.
Yeah, you dragged my sorry
back in from the bullpen, man.
drag me out. But it's always great to be here. Yeah, I've been enjoying retirement. I retired June 30th of the last year, and have spent a lot of time just in the backyard getting rid of invasive species like buckthorn and honeysuckle. I used to tell my wife, if I ever talk in public about getting rid of a honeysuckle or buckthorn, you can shoot me. And by now, she must have shot me 1,000 times because that's all I do.
Matt. Politicking, though, man, you got to be paying attention on some level.
Oh, I'm paying attention. I mean, I was just thrilled to death about ending gerrymandering in Wisconsin, getting fair maps. I mean, that was something that I poured a lot of time into. My friends at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and colleagues over at the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition just spent years and years and years banging our head against the wall, wondering if we were ever going to get to victory. And here we got to victory. And Evers outplayed the Republicans on it and forced the Republicans finally to sign on to his own map, which was just kind of an awesome end play. And we're getting much fairer maps than we had before. You know, they're going to be so fair that I wouldn't be surprised if Robin Voss decides not to run again. That's how fair they're going to be.
Hmm. So you think there could be some intrigue. Are you convinced that this is the final machination, that these maps are final? Or do you think there is some chance that Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty or some agent of the right still goes running off to, let's say, Diane Sykes in the 7th and hopes to catch a favorable judge in a stay?
It's much less likely now than had the Wisconsin Supreme Court imposed the maps. I mean, once the legislature itself passed Evers's maps and Evers signed them, I think they have much less of a leg to stand on. So I never say never, but it looks pretty good.
Are you encouraged by the fact that we now see Republicans threatening to move into different districts and they're strategizing their, you know, where they're going to run in the fall?
Yeah, well, they know that these maps are final for the fall. I can't see anything coming in and changing them for this fall. It's just the calendar's too tight. And again, I think with the legislature doing it, as opposed to Wisconsin Supreme Court, it's not going to happen that fast. So there may be a challenge down the road after this election. But right now, as you say, you see, you know, one Republican assembly person filing against another assembly person. Branchon may be in trouble.
Alleged felonious rep Janelle Branchon. Matt, you must miss the radio on days like the day when the news broke that the Trump campaign and Janelle Branchon was coordinating with out-party Republican county parties to funnel money back into the recall effort, or at least the primary effort against Robin Voss through the Adam Steen campaign. And, you know, the Wisconsin Ethics Commission says, you know, investigate and charge these people with felonies, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, there was a limit on what you could give to Steen's campaign. I think it was under $2,000 or right around
I thought
there.
It was like $1,000 yeah, cap on, I mean, assembly races.
Yeah, it's $1,000. It's $2,000, I think, for state senate. So the Steen people and the Trump people were saying, well, let's get rich people to give a lot more than that. $1,000 is pennies. We need more than that. So just give unlimited donations to the local county parties, and then the local county parties can give unlimited amounts to candidates, but you can't do it by saying, here, we're just going to wire this through you guys and launder it through you.
No, they put 63 on the line instead of because Scott Walker asked. I mean, didn't it have some reminiscences, some echoes of the John Doe?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so the John Doe 2 investigation was an investigation of Scott Walker, who had apparently broken the law in Wisconsin that was on the books at the time, which said if you're a candidate for office, you cannot coordinate with an outside group. And Walker was coordinating with Wisconsin Club for Growth and going all around the country telling people to donate six figures, seven figures to Wisconsin Club for Growth. And then, you know, they would listen to Walker and Walker's aides about how to use that money during the campaign. So there was clear coordination going on until the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which was then dominated by conservatives, gave Walker a get out of jail free card by saying, the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution forbids the state of Wisconsin from banning coordination between candidates and outside so-called issue advocacy groups. And the First Amendment doesn't say that. The U.S. Supreme Court has never said that. Actually, it has said the opposite of that, essentially. But anyway, they got away with it. Walker got away with it. And he what happened was Gableman and some of the other right-wing Wisconsin Supreme Court justices, they not only said that about that bizarre interpretation of the First Amendment, they told the special prosecutor to take a hike. They fired the special prosecutor and had that case dropped.
Matt Rothschild, Batman, formerly of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, current friend, I would hope.
Absolutely.
Matt, this was a flouting of even the Wild West, the last remnants of campaign finance laws we have here in the state of Wisconsin. There's not a lot, but what's there was just completely flouted by these actions by Branchon and the Steen campaign. And it's ironic to me in the echoes of the John Doe Walker, because when it was Scott Walker's campaign doing it, it was super okay. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court, as you mentioned, just basically buried it and said, burn the evidence. But if it happens to Robin Voss, it's much more problematic. And I think it was like the perfect storm, because the left is down for good governance for the most part,
I should say.
And the fact that Robin Voss was being targeted by the MAGA right, by these rigged elections, by these efforts to flout and go around campaign finance laws because Robin Voss was the air quotes victim. I think it was the perfect storm. And, you know, you got a bipartisan action and the harsh assessment, felonies,
yeah.
Felonious.
And two of the three, I think it was 5-1 at the Wisconsin Ethics Commission, with two of the three Republicans saying, Republican appointees saying, yeah, we should have a prosecution here.
Well, Matt Rothschild, let me ask you about the other prosecution that's been far too long delayed. What about the fake electors here in the state of Wisconsin? The former Republican Party chair, Andrew Hitt, goes running off to 60 Minutes.
I saw him.
Oh, poor me. The Trump base would have come after me if I was the one that would have prevented him from overturning the election by not signing off on this. No caveats. The guy's a lawyer. He's not dumb. No caveats like they had in Pennsylvania. No clarifying language just in case we're only here as substitute electors. None of that was in there. And then they're all duped. They're all poor us. Matt, have you been watching him and the cheese girl?
I watched it. Yeah, I thought it was kind of pathetic. And he was saying his best defense was, I'm an idiot and I'm a weenie. I mean, basically.
That sort of undermines what he does for a living.
I'm not sure it helps him get clients either, but it was all he's got at this point. At least at the end, he said, you know, we shouldn't vote for Trump. Trump's not qualified to be president again. I was glad he added that at the end, but it was his way for wiggling out. He did seem uncomfortable with the role that he played historically here, even before the 60 Minutes thing. I know he cooperated with the investigation on Capitol Hill. I don't think our AG, who's been just so slow on picking this up, Josh Gall, where are you? Hasn't gone after the fake electors. Maybe he's going after Cheesebro and Troopus now. I don't know. I don't think he's going to indict the false electors. But
will his plate be too full to charge Janelle Branchon? Because I'm not sure if local investigators are going to pick this mantle up either.
I mean, he should. I mean, I've been wondering, you know, where Josh Call's been the last 3 years. And certainly the Branchon stuff coming from the Wisconsin Ethics Commission should give him a heads up that he should do it. Or the DA here in Madison could do it, too. Or down where Branchon's district is, the DA down there, who's probably a Republican because it's Republican territory. But look, we need accountability for the people who are flouting our election laws, who are allegedly breaking the laws, as Janelle Brangin was allegedly breaking, and as the false electors, the 10 false electors admitted that they did something wrong, admitted that actually Biden won the election here in Wisconsin. Cheesebro and Troopas, who were advising the false electors here in Wisconsin, you know, they can be investigated too by Josh Call. And so it's always been a surprise to me that he hasn't done it. You know, what has he got to lose? Where is he? What's he doing?
Not clear, Matt Rothschild. You're right here with me in the WMDX 92.7 FM studios.
Nice studios. I haven't been up here.
I know. I like the fact that you can see humanity out the window. And nice ambient light. You know, that combination. It's great. People, if you ever want to come see me, just bring cookies for me and Matt. Matt, the fact that Wisconsin, and this shouldn't be a shocker, because Wisconsin is always seemingly at the eye of the hurricane whenever there's malfeasance, bad governance. We're always seemingly right there in the mix because we are a swing state. Of course, we've lived the history of Scott Walker and all the machinations of his bad governance. But the Cheesebro guy and the fact that this guy went to the Michigan prosecutors and basically made a self-serving confession of sort, apparently. Cheesebro was the architect of the fake elector scheme. And by all indications, this thing came out of Wisconsin, man. Mm. Wisconsin was the origination point, and then it was replicated across multiple jurisdictions, across multiple state lines, and very few caveats, very few disqualifiers saying this was anything other than a legitimate effort to offer a alternative slate of electors. And either, what, confuse the vice president or confuse the American people enough that you could throw it back to state legislatures.
And they said it was in case the courts ruled that there were some improprieties. But the Wisconsin Supreme Court, just hours before the Wisconsin electors signed their bogus statement, the Wisconsin Supreme Court threw out the last challenge by the Trump administration.
So we're well aware that this was not a legitimate alternative legal claim being upheld through some sort of statutory paperwork.
Right.
This was effectively a criminal conspiracy. And the other thing that I think is not talked about publicly, not really hammered in the press. You know I do sort of this advocacy radio thing, but Ron Johnson's pretty complicit in this.
Totally. I mean, he was trying to hand off the Wisconsin and Michigan bogus slate of electors to the vice president minutes before the start of the Electoral College on January 6th.
And Cheesebro, even in the later revelations to the apparently Michigan's AG's office, Dana Nessel's office, further implicated our buddy Ron Johnson, because that's the point where they got, you know, the false Wisconsin and Michigan electors had to be, what, personally delivered, and there was a meeting at the Russell, or well, I guess first it was at the Longworth Congressional Building, and then they had to take him over to the Russell office building where Ron Johnson's office is located. But it was all very convoluted, and I mean, I don't know why we don't see any charges there. You know, instead we're talking about a U.S. Supreme Court maybe delaying President Trump or former President Trump's trial over the question of absolute immunity, which is a ridiculous thing.
Oh, that decision yesterday really, really, you know, set me back. I mean, it looks like there's going to be no accountability for this guy on January 6th prior to the big elections coming up. And, you know, I'm angry still at Merrick Garland for just dragging his feet so long. I mean, he could have hired Jack Smith on January 22nd of 2021. He didn't have to wait 2 years or however long, 2.5 years to hire this guy or hire somebody else who could prosecute the case.
Man, they need some street fighters. I thought Jack Smith would be a street fighter, and perhaps he will be. But first, he has to get his day in court.
His boss sure isn't.
Well, clearly. he's Matt Rothschild. He's retired from his vigilante street fighting for good governance days, but he comes in to visit me occasionally. Be nice if I had a cookie to offer you. I bet I could find some in the kitchen.
I'll bring some next time.
Come back. Join us. 844-967-2789. I got a few more backyard questions. And also, bird watching. I know you're a big bird watcher.
That's something I know about.
Yes. I often give the bird. That's something slightly different. Come back. More Matt Rothschild, Batman. Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates radio show is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking about problems in the community is the first step for the Green Bay-based We All Rise African American Resource Center. But talking has to lead to helping. Executive Director Robin Scott.
They're in need of skill building, education, introduction to the workforce, and support along the way. We don't heal in silos.
Scott says since the nonprofit started a few years ago, more than 2,000 people have used the center to change their lives.
As a community, when we're all thinking about, you know, being the best version of ourselves, we have to ensure that we're being real. And I feel like when you have nonprofits in your community, that organizations that are on the ground and doing the work and they're willing to acknowledge exactly what's going on, that's a sign of a future of a healthy city.
Learn more about this important resource at weallriseaarc.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up the first hour of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, where this week Pete welcomes comedy writer Andrew Genzer to the show.
Welcome back. Aunt Carla is correcting her grammar. Sorry, bad grammar. Autocorrect. Speed texting. Schwan, man. I thought it was Schwan's. Okay. Elizabeth Taylor's uncle, Howard Young. In Minocqua. From the 608, also Carla. Oh, my God. Auto text. Howard Young lived in Minocqua. Carla is having all kinds of thumb problems tonight with her texting device. That's great. And then 920 Paula says, Blue Moon. Not sure what flavor it actually is, but it tastes so good. It's a chemical concoction. And then Rico from Rock County already said, I think I already said that. Turtle. Rico's been quiet the last couple of nights, Conrad. We went after him a little too hard the other night. He's one of our favorites. He's a Nightlight bestie. I'm talking with Andrew Genzer, comedy writer, former soup writer, is joining us here on Nightlight tonight. So before we move on, I just have to ask, what we talk about on the show, Andrew, is movies and TV, what people are watching. We give each other ideas. What are you watching right now? What are you excited about?
Right now, I just finished watching a show called The Curse, which I loved.
People are going nuts about that. It's good, huh?
Okay, yeah. It's very, I can see people not liking it, but it's very much up my alley. Very weird, left and center, funny, disturbing, all the thing. It's great. If you're a Nathan Fielder fan, you know, I enjoyed it a lot. I finished that. What
is that, Nathan, for you?
Yeah.
That's so him. Okay.
With Benny Safdie, one of the Safdie brothers. You know, they made a bunch of movies anyways. And Emma Stone's in it. It's I loved it.
I'll have to check that out. That's so cool.
I'm like halfway through Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is the Amazon TV version of the movie with Donald Glover. Maya Erskine, they're great.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that too. Did you watch True Detective, the new season?
I haven't watched the last couple seasons. I know. Are you into that?
I finished it. I'd love to, after you're done with it, I would love to talk to you about it because it's one of those shows where my joke was you can't play video poker for 2 minutes while you're watching it. Otherwise you get totally lost. Like you really have to follow everything about it. So I got to go back and rewatch the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But the first season was obviously incredible. That was, at this point,
amazing.
More than like 10 years ago. I mean,
yeah. And I like the third season too, with Mahershala Ali and Stephen Dorff, actually.
Yeah. And they're all like, I haven't seen two or three, but does that matter?
No, not, you'll have, no, they're all standalone. The That's second I season I thought was awful, like unwatchably awful at times.
I know people weren't into it.
It was just rude to put out a show like that.
Like they can't help, it's hard to make a show.
I know. It's easy for me to sit here and criticize. So I have one more fun story while we're on memory lane. Do you remember every time you would become friends with someone on Facebook, I would write, "It's about time, you two."
Like, it was such a good joke that just kept going on and on and on every time. You wouldn't know the person I was.
No. But I would act like I knew both of you. And how are you guys not friends? And you would laugh. It was very silly, very stupid. I knew it was right up your alley.
Yeah.
And then I think you liked the girl and you said, "Hey man, please don't do that joke this time." I can only hope that's your wife and you ended up getting married to her. Cause
you know, for the sake of the story, I'll say yes. I don't remember. But let's pretend it was.
Okay.
But yeah. I remember being like, all right, this is going to be weird because it actually kind of applies. So don't make it a thing.
And I did because I'm a pal, right?
Oh, you're a buddy. I know.
So, all right. So you're probably maybe even a bigger Simpsons fan than me.
Well, I'm out of practice.
Same.
You know what I mean? If you're gonna ask me deep trivia questions, I may not do that well.
I think these are pretty easy because I picked ones that I assume you would know because I know them too. But if they're too hard, you know, because it's easy when it's in your mind, it's go, well, of course he knows this. It's like,
sure.
All right, so let's try a few here.
Let's do it.
Okay. What Simpsons character came home from the store with Marge and said, "We got beets"?
Homer?
No. Hey, this is gonna be hard.
I don't remember.
It's Lisa.
Now I do. We got beets.
We
so
got
excited.
Beets. She was so excited.
Was that when Lisa was that when she becomes a vegetarian?
It was either that or when Homer lost Maggie. I can't remember.
Okay. I'm already off to a terrible start.
All right, no, that's okay. I'll try to pick some that are more obvious. This cheese doodle is our last morsel of food.
You asked me who said that?
Yeah.
Or what episode it was?
No. Who said it?
I'm guessing Homer again.
It was Flanders. Flanders said it to Homer when they were on the rafting trip. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
This seemed like such a great idea when I thought of it earlier.
No. This is going great.
All right. Here's another one. Boy, Mom sure will be happy you won $50.
Bart.
After Homer bet on football and his line was, "You'd think that, wouldn't you?" All right, let's try to do a couple more here. We're running out of time. All right.
I'm on a roll.
This one you have to get, Genzi. Okay. I know you'll get this. Come along, Bort.
I'm guessing it's Homer.
It's not a regular. It was just, remember that where they were looking for the license plate?
The license or the little tag, name tags.
Yes.
It was a Bort.
Yeah, yeah, and she said, like, come on.
They have a Bort, but not a Bart. Yeah, now I know that one.
Who's named come Bort? On, and all of a sudden, everybody in the store is named Bort. Come along, Bort.
Yeah.
Are you talking to me? No, my son's name is Bort, too.
An example of a great dumb joke.
Right, exactly. All right, here's one I think you should be able to do okay in this one. I've learned that life is one crushing defeat after another until you just wish Flanders was dead. Let's try one more, and let's see if we get a streak going.
Okay.
Up yours, Krabappel.
Was it Bart?
It's not out. No, I'll let you take that back. He's on the periphery of Bart's world, though.
Oh, is it Nelson or Milhouse?
Milhouse, yeah.
All right.
Here we go.
I got there.
All right.
Yay.
See,
I'm a genius. Simpsons genius. Over there.
It's funny because we do these quizzes where I'll have like a critic on. I'll make them guess the scene of a movie that I think is obvious, but unless it's coming from your head, you don't know. You know, it could be from anything.
I know. And I don't watch them anymore as much. I got a 4-year-old. I've got my brain's gone.
I know. You got a perfect excuse. Hey, buddy, it was great catching up with you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, man. It was so much fun. If you ever want to have me on again, try and find my number. I don't know.
I'll catch up with you. It's about time you
do.
All right,
man. Thanks, Pete.
See you, buddy. That's Andrew Genzer, former comedy writer and current comedy writer, one of the funniest people I know. Great to have Andrew on. Hey, in just a couple minutes, my brother is going to tell the story about how he got the UW Badgers Twitter handle and the negotiation that took place after. It's a story you won't want to miss. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic, where the fans own the team. This is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Tune in Monday for a very special Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got Chuck Kwala coming in studio 4 to 6 p.m. across the Civic Media Network.
It's 2024 and Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth. We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Water World, is ready for another season. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. Hundreds of cars and trucks trapped in several feet of snow by a blizzard hitting Northern California and Nevada.